Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast and a Happy New Year, our first podcast of 2026 back in our lovely studio. The Christmas decorations are coming down, the Interpros are behind us for now and we're into the Champions and Challenge Cup. Six Nations is just around the corner. Bernard Jackman is here with me in studio. Gareth Steenson is on the line. Fellas, Happy New Year. How are we doing?
Good, thanks. Yeah, best time, best rugby time of the year. Interpros into Europe, into Six Nations. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
That's exactly it, Gareth. You know, this time of year, things ramp up. You get the Champions Cup and everything all of a sudden is starting to be viewed through that lens of the Six Nations coming around the corner.
It is. It's an opportunity now for boys to put their hands up as well. I suppose you get everyone's excited about Christmas. It's always a busy schedule. But when you come out the other side of the new year, you're very quickly turning around to Europe. You're very quickly finishing off, you know, your league systems. And yeah, people start putting their hands up now for Six Nations selection. So expect the rugby to get really, really interesting over the next few weeks.
And it is kind of like we keep talking about the Six Nations, but every half decent performance, all of a sudden you're going, oh, Jesus, is he making a late move for a Six Nations squad? Is this player going to get a chance? Is Andy Farrell going to start looking at, you know, we're going to talk about it a little bit later on. Is he going to start looking at maybe a few more Ulster players, given how they're doing? It does all just kind of, you know, everything gets lifted.
It's probably more relevant than it has been under Farrell's reign, because obviously the Irish team looked like they needed a little bit of new blood or an injection of energy or something a little bit different. Obviously, November wasn't brilliant. The Six Nations last year wasn't brilliant. It wasn't catastrophic, but there is a sense that Farrell will be more ruthless in terms of his squad selection than he's ever been. He's been so loyal, but he's been loyal to players who have performed for him. Mm-hmm. But I think over the last 12 months, there's certainly question marks around, does it need a little bit of something different? So the performances that some of those Irish players have, Irish qualified players, but not regulars, put in over Christmas against their peers, international peers in some cases, has to be worth more now than ever was.
It certainly is. And I'm going to spring this one on you. I don't think it was on the list. Your one rugby wish for 2026 can be absolutely anything.
More financial stability in the game. Yeah, I feel for players and coaches who are constantly worried about whether the club can afford to keep them or the club will be in business. We're 27, 28 years into pro rugby. That's still, for me, the thing I'd love to see fixed. Just a bit more financial stability.
30 years into pro rugby.
30 years pro rugby.
30 yeah, years into pro
more rugby. Even worse.
Yeah. Steno, anything for you in 2026?
Yeah, back up what Birch says, but again, I'd like to see more, you know, those big rivalries come back and crowds getting back out there and people getting in the stands and enjoying the game and getting out and support some good rugby that's being played and maybe a bit more positivity around the game as well. Like, we're always seeming to be talking it down a little bit, you know, let's get behind the boys when they're out there playing and putting their bodies on the line. So, yeah, if we can get out there and support what a good brand or game of rugby we have, that would be great.
Yeah, I think mine would nearly be along those lines as well. I've actually stop trying to pick faults in every game every week. And I think we've been talking about it a few times now, but the amount of complaints maybe about how the style of the game is at the moment. And at a certain point, you just kind of have to go. It does feel like maybe sometimes everyone is tripping over themselves, trying to be more critical than the last person and to make an even better point. I think sooner or later, you have to just step back and take the game for what it is. Let's move to the matches themselves. Two Interpros at the weekend and two pretty clear winners. Ulster with a brilliant second half to maintain their excellent start to the season. 28-3 winners against Munster in Belfast. And then on Saturday at Aviva Stadium, we thought we had a game for the first half between Leinster and Connacht, but Leinster blew the doors off them in the second half. 52-17 in the end, a seventh win in a row for Leinster in all competitions. Champions Cup is up this week. Leinster host La Rochelle at 5:30 Saturday evening. Then Munster are away to Toulon in France on Sunday lunchtime. And in the Challenge Cup, Connacht and Ulster both in action on Sunday. Connacht away to Montpellier. Ulster take on the Cheetahs in Amsterdam, of all places. Let's start on Ulster, though, fellas. 28-3 winners against Munster. 6 out of 8 so far in the URC. Third in the table. A game in hand on second place in Glasgow. They've had a very, very good start, Bernard, the whole way through up until January. But I don't know, this felt like a real statement win. I know they had that big one away to Sharks. That felt a little bit out of the blue. It felt like a bit of a, you know, the Sharks can be a flaky team as well. But the way they went about that second half against Munster, particularly after what was a really poor game from both sides in the opening 40, that felt like a real stand up moment. We're here.
Yeah, it was a real positive Christmas for them. If you look at the three interpros that they played, obviously against Leinster, they had a lot of players out, a very weak bench, but really troubled Leinster with a kind of hit and run type strategy. Didn't overplay, even though they've become a team who are very comfortable on the ball. And so I thought that was really smart. And it was only the strength of the Leinster bench and the weakness of the Ulster bench to stop them getting a result. Then they went to Connacht, some reinforcements, players back from injury, and got a bonus point win. And then obviously to back that up with a big performance at home. I think they'll be gutted didn't get the bonus point. That's how dominant they were. And obviously they had a couple of opportunities at the end that they butchered. But given the conditions, it was just great to see Ulster still trying to play the type of game that they've been working on obviously all summer. You've seen it from the first round. They've, like, people say, oh, new coaches need time. Well, from an attacking point of view, Mark Sexton, from round one, they looked like a team who knew what they were doing, and they've just got better and better. And then obviously players have grown in confidence with some wins, game time, some young lads who maybe aren't mentally scarred from the previous 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years of kind of turmoil. And it's all coming together really well. The Ravenhill fans seem to be back on board. And it's a really exciting project. And, you know, I want to talk to Garrett about rebuild. I'm into rebuilds, right? I'm fascinated by them. I'm a United fan, so I've just seen another one fall short.
You've seen a lot of rebuilds.
Exactly, yeah. And now we got to wait for a new manager and all that stuff. But just looking at what Ulster have done, and it's early days, but certainly the signs are positive. Where Connacht are at, you know, obviously have the man now in Stuart Lancaster, but they obviously aren't clear that it's coming to fruition. Obviously, Kieran Frawley's a good signing, but you wonder how that's going to look and how long it's going to take. And then Munster, after a bright start, hit a few little speed bumps at the moment. But just looking at England and looking at Harlequins as well, actually, I saw their CEO come out this week and try to explain the problems they have and having changed coach. They've kind of lost their identity. But look, Garrett's experience in Exeter, and obviously Garrett was part of that team who came out of Championship and were the, I suppose, the backbone of a side that had incredible success. But then Baxter over the last maybe 2 years has been criticised a lot. Exeter down near the bottom of the table. But at the moment, it looks like they're back. And it's just, you know, from Steno's point of view, obviously being an Ulster man, watching what's happened there, looking at Exeter, I mean, what are the key points that you need as for a fan that you need to say it'll be okay? You know, we're on the right track.
Yeah, no, look, I see Ulster actually about a year or two down the line, a little bit further maybe than Exeter are a little bit. So from Exeter's point of view, I know whenever I went in after winning the double in 2020, whenever I retired, went into the coaching setup, we kind of lost our way a little bit. We kind of got stuck in a way of talking that this is how we won a double. And maybe it was the first time we'd ever really, really had success with the group that we had. So you have to learn that as well. And that's right across the board. That's coaching staff, everybody. And you have to keep evolving. The best thing I always experienced when I was at Exeter Chiefs was we were always trying to evolve, always trying to push the game forward. I probably felt that was the one stage where at the club, we probably kind of sat in our laurels and kind of went, this is why we were successful. And it probably just needed a little bit of revamp. It probably needed to recharge. A couple of new voices coming in. Players obviously would come in different ways. We actually brought a lot of young fellas through. And you talk about the battle scars. They were probably trying to learn in an environment where it was used to winning. And people were used to seeing the team win. And it can add, put a lot of pressure from the outside, which an outside noise would have hurt a lot of people. And whenever you're in a coaching group that was used to winning, it's just a matter of hitting the reset button. And it probably needed a couple of new faces. Like Dave Walder, as example, coming in there, has totally recharged the attack. I know that he's completely changed the calls that have been used for the last 12 years at the club. So straight away, the likes of Henry Slater, you start naming these guys who have probably heard the same messages for many years. It's now hearing a different voice. But I know they're not doing anything greatly different. They're just literally going around that. And they're rebuilding a culture that works for the team that's specific to them. And I think if you look at Ulster as an example now, Richie's been in there now coming up in a couple of seasons. Mark's obviously come in there, but they've all kind of worked together previously, so they would all kind of know what they want out of the team. And I would dare say that even towards the end of last year, if you looked at the way Ulster were trying to play, they were trying to almost implement what Mark Sexton wanted to happen. So Mark was probably ahead of the game when he came in. Same thing happened with Dave Walder. Dave Walder kind of came in at the end with Exeter Chiefs at the end of last year. So that's, you're probably seeing 7 to 8 months worth of work. And it's like anything, if boys are playing a brand of rugby they enjoy playing, it really, really adds to it. And I think they're creating a really good culture. The best thing I love about what Ulster are doing is they're sticking to what they play, regardless of what the weather conditions are. Yes, they'll probably play a little tactics here and there, but they're sticking true to it. If they come through results, they come through it. If they don't, it was something we talked a lot about. We were going to go out and we were going to perform, play the way Exeter Chiefs played. And if we come out on the right side of it, because we're enjoying it, we're probably going to play well at it. And I think that's a big thing you're seeing with Ulster currently at the minute.
Gareth, are you seeing the public getting on side with it, maybe more than they have in previous years as well? Like, you're involved with schools and clubs and stuff like that. Are you seeing a greater buy-in from the general public?
Well, absolutely. Sure, all you had to do was look in the game of the weekend. It was a sellout. So straight away, this is something I was kind of hoping for, that you'll see sellout crowds coming back. People go to watch a good brand of rugby. They don't go to watch, six threes and whatever. But obviously, an interpro like that, it's always going to be tight. But you can see that Ulster, ultimately, like Bernard said, they're going to be disappointed they didn't get a bonus point. But they're still trying to play. They're trying to score tries. They've got some players there like Bryn Ward, Zach Ward, these fellas who, when they get touches on the ball, they're exciting to watch. Jacob Stockdale, and people pay to go and watch that. And I think that's the way forward. I think from an Ulster point of view, it's great to see that they've kind of established that this is the type of brand they want to play. And I don't see them changing what they're going to do. Now, if they don't win games on it, I think they're kind of in a position now they're comfortable to go, we're still better for the experience of playing, and they're going to win more games than they lose. And at the end of the day, if you're scoring, I've got it down that they've got 7 bonus points this year. That's effectively 2 wins, whether you look at it other ways as well. So if you're scoring bonus points, whether you're losing bonus points or winning bonus points by scoring 4 tries or whatever, that's so huge picking up over the course of a season.
Where have you seen, to stay on the topic of the rebuilds? This isn't the first attempted rebuild in a province in recent years. Munster have had a few. Connacht have had a few ever since Pat Lamb left. Ulster, this is probably their second in maybe the last 8 or 9 years. Dan McFarland and now this. Where have you seen the ones that have gone right? Where have they gone right? And the ones that have gone wrong? Is there like a common theme of where they are going wrong?
I just think you need to back the leadership. You just need to give them the confidence that they're going to last it out, last through it. I think you see a lot of chop. If you see clubs who chop and change too often, are looking for the quick fix, they're the ones who don't always get there or take a long time to get there. So obviously, the Rob Baxter example is interesting because he's like the Alex Ferguson, real long standing, knows the club inside out.
And it's nearly the rare example of the rebuild where it's not a coaching change.
Exactly.
It's still ultimately the same.
Yeah,
the
he
same
can bring in he can bring in different assistants, but yeah, it's the same effective leader. And whether he stays the same or whether he evolves a little bit and changes his philosophy is interesting. But obviously, let's look at an Irish point of view. Clayton, Stewart, Richie, they're not long standing coaches in the same place, so and they're all relatively new. Richie's got the bounce now. Clayton, I'd say, is going to go through a little bit of a period where it's a sticky part in the middle where you're trying to implement change and people resist it, maybe, or you don't have the right people for the culture you want and the philosophy you want to play, and you got to try and find them. And I think the same with Lancaster, and I think both need absolute support from the provinces and the RFU to give them the staff they want and the players they want as quickly as possible. And then just let them do it, because you've paid them big money and you've recruited, scouted them, and they both have big CVs. So if they're the experts, then you just let them put together the team that they need. And the sooner that happens this summer will be ideal, I think. And then you'll start to see the results and you start to build, and that group will stay together then hopefully for 2, 3, 4 seasons.
And Steve, as you kind of said in your answer there, a large part of it is the players buying into it and the style of play not really changing week on week to suit conditions. And we saw that on on Friday night in the Ulster game against Munster, where absolutely dreadful conditions, but Ulster maintained that commitment even when there were a load of first half errors around handling. In the second half, they still tried to do the same things. They still tried to run the ball back at Munster, and eventually they got their reward. And I think it's not the first time we've spoken about their back three so far this season. Zach Ward, brilliant. Jacob Stockdale at fullback looks really high on confidence again. And Werner Koch is the kind of man of the last 6-7 weeks at the moment, playing brilliant rugby. There's it's a sort of a back three that is kind of getting bums on seats as well. People are showing up to see what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, 100%, but it's about getting them the ball. And, you know, they're playing currently in a team that is willing to get them the ball. At the end of the day, if they're playing in a side which is playing 10-man rugby and they're crashing up the middle of the field, forwards aren't comfortable handling the ball, you're not going to see these lads. You're going to see them receiving kicks and running back against, you know, 12 people running at them in a kick chase. So ultimately, it's about understanding what the strength of your team is, I think. And also the brand that... the coach wants to play as well, and I think they've kind of worked out what their strengths are at Ulster as well. And clearly in the pre-season, they've went away, they've worked hard at it. The beauty of it as well, they've got a young group there, and again, I can relate back to what I kind of understand around what the Chiefs was. You have to take a little bit of pain, and they were probably taking the pain, but they were probably learning. Like those young fellas were out, they're working on their skills probably last year when it didn't look as good, when they're under a little bit of pressure, not scoring the tries, probably getting close, not getting the job done at the end of the last season. And now it's clicking a little bit. And it's like anything, it's like Bernard even touched on there. You win one game, you win two. You win two, you feel good. You start picking up losing bonus points, you start picking up winning bonus points. And it all seems to just click. And I think at the minute, the way they're going in terms of their rebuild is, you know, they're in a good space. I don't think it's something, and the also thing is as well, they're all playing with smiles on their faces. That's infectious. It's infectious to the crowd. It's infectious to people who want to come and watch it. And ultimately, you know, they're playing good rugby. I just hope that they can continue it with it. So obviously playing in the Challenge Cup will help them because, again, if they get winning games, they get the knockout stages, you start potentially playing in big games, it only preps you for whenever they get back into the Champions Cup.
It seems week on week, there's nearly a new 21, 22-year-old who's kind of getting an opportunity and shining in an Ulster jersey. This week it was Bryn Ward. You said a handful of appearances so far this season, a lot of them off the bench. He had one little kind of rookie error, I think, in the first half where he tried to pick a ball from the base of the scrum one-handed and lost it forward. But aside from that, like, the best player on the pitch, he was destructive, he was dynamic, he was all over the park. He's kind of just in, I suppose, he's still only 21 years old, but encompassing, I suppose, what this Ulster team have been this season of young, inexperienced players, not necessarily young, if we're talking about someone like Zach Ward, who's, you know, further into his 20s, but inexperienced players who are just going out there and giving it a go.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of him play AIL. He's very powerful. So it's one thing, like his post-match interview, the raw exuberance, you know, playing his first start and into pro, is so happy to be playing in a packed Ravenhill. And he played with that kind of energy and excitement. But he also could back it up with his power and his footwork and his abrasiveness. So he laid down a real significant marker. I mean, like when Augustus got injured the week before, you're really going to miss him because they need his carry. But then you find a player in their academy who looks like he has the potential to potentially be the long-term successor to someone like Augustus. So he's obviously another cab off the rank in terms of some of those youngsters. I'm actually... just a couple of players that aren't new. So I think Nathan Doak is much improved, right? So playing with a confidence, but probably able to play a faster pace than maybe I thought suited him, you know? I think Stockdale is back in form. And then Tom Stewart, right? So, like, that's a sign of a really good coaching group and a really good environment where players are playing their best rugby. You know, the Bryn Moores are shining new toys. And they're great. You need lots of them. Zach Ward, obviously, big sevens profile, still newish to 15s to a certain extent, but he's a little bit older. But it's the lads who you've watched consistently over the last 3 or 4 years in Ravenhill or in away grounds, and obviously very good players, but they just seem to have found another 10%. I think that's going to be really interesting for Ulster's long-term future is that they're getting better, more out of their established players, but also we talked earlier on about the Irish squad. You know, Nathan Doak, for example, now, surely he's top three. Surely he's number three in Irish scrum halves. You know, he missed out in November. So he gets in there, he gets better for that experience. You know, Stockdale gets back in the Irish starting team potentially. Obviously, Hugh Keenan comes back. He's probably not going to play fullback, but maybe on the wing. And Tom Stewart, I think, has to be looking at being back in the Irish squad ahead of maybe Gus McCarthy, who's not getting much game time. You know, so suddenly then Ulster now have, and then you add Izzy and Henderson, Postlewaite. Suddenly Ulster can have maybe 8, 9, 10 players, Zach Ward, in an Irish squad. You know, that's vastly different than what we were looking at a year ago.
I suppose the larger question, though, and I might bring Steena in on that, is like you've listed out a handful of players, 7, 8, 9 players there for Ulster that are certainly meriting a look in an Irish squad. How many are you confident we actually are going to see? Not just in an Ireland squad, this Six Nations, Gareth, but actually seeing game time. And I would remove maybe someone like Stuart McCluskey from that list who is a regular in a match day squad. I'm talking now maybe about the guys like Tom Stewart, a Zach Ward, potentially, Stockdale, guys who maybe are getting in the odd extended squad every now and again, but aren't actually seeing game time. How many of those are we actually going to see make a breakthrough and be rewarded?
I think it's difficult around. Again, it'll turn around to what Andy's looking for. Ultimately, it's going to be down to what way they want to play the game. I think for Tom Stewart, obviously Dan Shane, the form that he's in, I do think the way he's playing for Ulster, he definitely's put his hand up. He deserves to be in around that squad. Whether, again, injuries will play a part in all this as well, for Jacob as well. I think ultimately, if you look at the way, you know, the back three is playing, if you think if you put him in a context, he's probably up against James Lowe. You know, they've both got left foot, so they both are playing on that way. So they kind of can mirror each other a little bit. Also, you know, the fact that Jacob can play fullback as well will help. Again, for Zach Ward, it's probably a little bit early, maybe potentially in around that. You know, if you look at where Leinster are playing, you know, Tommy O'Brien's playing well on the wing whenever he gets the opportunity. But ultimately, I really like what Nathan's doing as well. I think this you're probably seeing now with John Cooney left that Nathan's probably established himself now as the main nine. He knows he's the main nine now, so he'd probably carry himself a little bit different. He's kicking his goals really well too, so he brings that element. He's just signed a new contract, so he'd probably be feeling pretty good about himself. And he's playing good rugby, so he's definitely putting his hand up. How many actually get in and play? I think the next couple of weeks are really important around, you know, and the problem I think that Ulster probably have is they're playing in the Challenge Cup, which may be a hindrance to them, maybe not, I'm not sure, but it'll really boil down to the way Andy wants to play the game and what way he sees it. You know, ultimately with the French playing in the first game up against those guys, does he go tried and tested or does he go, obviously it's a away game, it's going to be difficult. And it'll ultimately come down to how they pitch up the training and how they actually carry themselves and all that. So there's a lot of things in around it. How much of them do they see game time? I do see more of them getting game time than normal. I do think that we, you know, Stu McCluskey obviously would be in around that mix anyway. The likes of Jude Postlewaite, if he gets into the squad, does he train well? If they're picking Stu potentially, do they look at going with the two Ulster centres? It's difficult to know because, again, not knowing what Andy's thinking, but I'd like to say this is probably the best opportunity you've got of seeing a few more Ulster boys potentially getting a run out in this year's Six Nations.
Yeah, there's a bigger picture to this. Some Fitcher fans saying, well, I don't care about getting players in the Irish squad. All I care about is my province. But and as I said, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but just why it's in my mind is effectively, if some of those Ulster players can get into the squad, right, and then they can displace the current internationals, there's central contracts in the equation in a year, 2 years' time as well. And then what does that do for Ulster or Munster or Connacht if they get more internationals? It changes the dynamic of the spend that they have that they can put back into their own squads, if that makes sense. So, and if you look at the age profile, let's take Postlewaite as an example. He looks like he has huge potential. I'm not writing off McCluskey, Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henshaw, Bundy, Aki, but at some stage, they're going to lose their central contracts because they're going to retire, okay? So if an Ulster player or a Munster player or Connacht player is in position to be good enough to step up and take that central contract, which has historically been in Leinster, well, that's a massive boost on the field, you have a season international, but secondly, you're only paying a percentage of their salary, and that helps then bring through the next generation, etc. So it's been very lopsided. All the central contracts have been in Leinster, but that's something that I think the Ulster bean counters will be looking at and getting excited about.
Would it feel like a little bit of an anti-climax if, after all that, the Ireland A team that plays England A in a few weeks' time, if that was the one that was heavily loaded with Ulster players?
It would be, but if that's the next step for them, that's what they got to do. They got to go and play in that game and play well and continue to impress. As Stino said, if they get into camp, they got to show that they're... Like, for Ireland, fairness, if you think about it, like, there's players who've gone into camp and he's taken an instant look. Sam Brenegast, mm-hmm. Gus McCarthy, you know, you can impress in camp and get game time. So now, obviously, others would argue that he haven't become first choice, or Gus McCarthy hasn't become first choice, but that's because he's in a position with a lot of quality. But I think the key part is getting into camp, and then obviously if you play against France in the Six Nations, it's ideal. If it's England A, you got to go take your chance.
Let's move it on to Munster now, because again, we're talking about rebuild here, and it's been one of the interesting talking points coming out of the game at the weekend, Bernard, was something Clayton McMillan said straight after the game as well. It was a very, very pointed comment. It felt like it was an opportunity for a number of people to put themselves in a jersey in the coming weeks, and we really just walk away with more questions than answers. In the entire post-match thoughts of the Munster head coach, that did actually feel like a fairly damning assessment.
Yeah, Clayton's very interesting. Clayton doesn't say very much. He's a very quiet, reserved type of guy. But what he says, he speaks the truth. You know, he doesn't sugarcoat anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the response that was needed after that performance. It was a horrible performance from Munster. I think the fans appreciated more, you know, that the coach isn't trying to tell them something that they know is false. And now the challenge is, can the players step up? You know, I think he's been really good, like Lancaster has, of giving all those full-time players opportunities over the first 6 months.
48 players. 48 across, players, yeah. Across his first six games, 48 yeah. players.
So he really has. And at the start it was working. They were getting wins. The performances were a little bit iffy at times, but Leinster's performance in Croke Park was outstanding. But in general, the performances were a little bit hit and miss. But now I think they've all had a fair crack. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's been fit. And he's going to have to stop giving game time to players and pick the fellas he can trust.
Yeah, and so, you know, it seems like that's the way they are going to be going moving forward. He hinted that the chopping and changing will probably slow down a little bit. I think that on average, there was a piece in The Independent today that they'd, I think it was on average, seven changes week on week so far this season. McMillan said that probably won't be as much going forward. Mike Prendergast elaborated on it as well. He said, I can say that he, being McMillan, said it to the players this morning as well. It's now where we'll start seeing the same team on a more regular basis. At a certain point, do you kind of need to start settling on what your best team is and ultimately make a decision on whether some players are good enough or not?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think he's probably in the first little bit. You've got to remember, he's come in. He's getting to see the players now on a daily basis. So he's probably seeing a lot more than what they're doing on the field and how they're actually carrying themselves on a daily basis. He's probably working out what his best 28, 30 is. And now he's probably answered all those questions. He's probably went, these are the guys that I can back. These are the guys that whenever we get to the business end of the season, business end of the year, because ultimately Munster really, they started pretty well. You know, they're doing okay in the URC now because they've started reasonably well in the table almost. So now you can really hone into it. You know, they're still in a good spot considering, you know, in the Champions Cup, they're still very much in that competition. Now you can really hone into it. Now you understand that you've got your guys back. They're getting ready from, you know, the November series is gone. And now there's guys getting ready for Six Nations. So I think actually now he's probably understood now who, yes, like you said, fellas had an opportunity to put their hands up, maybe missed that opportunity, but he's obviously blooded a lot of guys as well. So at the end of the day, if it comes round to that he needs to call on certain players, he probably can, knowing that they've already played and got minutes under their belt. And I actually think now he's probably established, and right across that coaching group, they're probably going to turn around and go, I think I kind of know who my group is now going forward for the rest of the season.
The The worrying part maybe over the last couple of months is we've got a fair indication of how Munster look when Craig Casey and Jack Crowley are in the team and how they look when they're not in the team. And they are two very, very different teams.
Yeah, and add Tyburn to that as well. So those take those three out, which they were arrested for international player welfare. They look a bit rudderless, really. Mm. You know, particularly when all three are gone together. And that's obviously... With all of them being internationals, and there's less clashes now, but still, I mean, you can't have that because even when they have to be rested, injuries, etc., you can't have a massive drop off, particularly in your halfbacks. they set the tone. So players haven't taken the opportunity who've been given game time there, but they can still turn it around. You know, if they get another shot, which over the course of the next 4 or 5 months they will get one more chance, I would imagine most of them. They may not get many more chances. And I'd say if you were some of those fringe players who played the other night in Belfast, you'd be worried about your future.
And just on a physicality point of view, like Ulster just completely ground them down at the weekend. Would it concern you that we've spoken about this at Munster maybe in the past, where when they come up against very, very powerful teams, they have struggled. If you were to stand the 215s side by side last week, I certainly wouldn't think there's an enormous power difference on the face of it.
I don't think Munster are massively underpowered against a team like Ulster. No disrespect to Ulster. I don't think Ulster have some powerful athletes now. Zach Ward, Bryn Ward, Izichukwu, etc. Angus Bell. So they have improved in that area, but they're not the litmus test for power sides.
That's almost my point.
Yeah,
second best.
100%. And some of those Munster players had stood up to Leinster the week before, manfully, who were a more powerful side, the most powerful side in Irish rugby. So it's the top 6 inches. That's the problem. Why they went up, like, they never got off the bus. And that's what will frustrate McMillan more than anything else, because don't forget what he hangs his hat on. It's honesty, physicality, a hardness, a consistency, and it just wasn't there.
I'm curious to see how much these next couple of Champions Cup and Challenge Cup weeks actually impact Ireland with the Six Nations, because the quirk of the way the games have fallen, Munster played two French teams in a row, Leinster played two French teams in a row, Connacht played two French teams in a row over the next couple of weeks, and Ulster, they're cheated this weekend. I can't remember who they're playing next week, but at least three of the four Irish provinces are playing back-to-back French teams a few weeks out from Ireland, France and the Six Nations. Do you think that has the potential to work in their favour, just get used to maybe a few things?
Well, I think...
Or is that reading a little bit too far into everything?
No, but I think, it would be very helpful if we got some really good performance, really good wins against them, just in terms of building confidence. I still think that there's an element of, in Irish rugby, just lacking a little bit of real belief that we're world beaters at the moment, or we're setting the way the game is being played and everyone else is looking at us, which has been the case for periods under Joe Schmidt and under Andy Farrell. I think at the moment we maybe feel we've been left behind a little bit. And so to go and have some big wins in Europe against French opposition will certainly have them bouncing going into camp in a way that maybe they went into November. Let's remember, you know, the vast majority of the team that played against the All Blacks played against Munster in Croke Park and were well beaten against a team that they've always been able to beat. So that's not great for confidence. So definitely there's an opportunity to get some confidence and deal with some of these big scrums, deal with some of the power, and just feel a little bit better about ourselves.
We'll move it on to Leinster, 52-17 winners against Connacht. Steno, from a Leinster perspective, they've had to win a few arm wrestles over the last few weeks. And while those can be brilliant for morale and really, really knit a team together, sometimes a good old blowout win really, really just does the job. And it felt like that at the weekend for Leinster. It was a nice time to just kind of let the shackles off a little bit.
It was, and I think the good thing as well with it was they didn't have it all their own way in the first half as well. So, and obviously then whenever you get a couple of scores and then whenever those types of games happen, you start seeing intercepts, you start seeing chips coming off, you start seeing things going your way, it does feel good. And then you can just see a team deflate. And Many's a time a game can be tight and all of a sudden a couple of scores and then the team's trying to get back at you and you end up running away with a cricket score. So look, they'll be delighted with that, I think. It really bodes quite well into going into what'll be a tough game this weekend against La Rochelle. But I honestly think, to get a few scores under their belt, you see some good tries scored. They were scoring off first phase at times as well, which shows that their set piece moves are working. So lots of different things. The phase shape was looking good, like even for Dan Shane's first try. Little things that'll give real confidence to the boys, and probably give them a real good feel good factor, because ultimately there's been a few question marks over Leinster over the start of the year. Obviously, they're not sitting top of the URC, which they normally would be in around it, but look, they're still in a good space in terms of like the Champions Cup. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of these guys are test animals. They're used to going out and performing in big environments. And I actually think now when you talk about that confidence thing, they'll be feeling pretty good going into this weekend. And there's a lot to be said for that. And there's a lot of history around that. And let's face it, they've probably had an eye on this fixture now since the fixtures came out in the list. So in the back of their mind, they'll have looked at it. They'll have gone, all the things you're talking around, yeah, there's Six Nations coming up soon. And they'll probably have, earmarking opportunities against certain opposition. So, and obviously you throw in the Ronan O'Gara factor. So there's so many different things around this game, which makes it really exciting. And I think Leinster will be delighted, obviously, to put a big win over a local rival last week.
Yeah, it's hard to get a read on how to preview this weekend's game until we kind of see what the La
Team is.
Rochelle team is this weekend, because they put 60 plus points on Toulon at the weekend too, who had a second string team out. And it largely does depend on what sort of a La Rochelle team comes up here this weekend. But on the Connacht win, as Gareth was saying, like, it was a good confidence booster at a nice time in the season. They're 7 wins in a row now in all competitions. Are you seeing that incremental improvement in performance week on week, particularly around the attack, which has been criticised?
No, the Connacht game was a vast improvement in terms of attack. Now, in fairness, Connacht are pretty poor,
yeah,
and they weren't under as much pressure as they would have been.
It's not a result that'll make or break the season.
But it does. It absolutely makes you feel a lot better this week prepping for La Rochelle. Those youngsters who played, like Hector Cooney, JJ Kenny again, I thought Mangan,
Brian Deeney,
were all excellent. And they, don't forget, like, some of those, they had a tough South Africa tour, so 4 months later, they're back playing the Viva in Interpro against some lads that they were in academy with and really seasoned professionals in Connacht, and were dominant and scored lots of tries, probably could have scored a couple more. So I think that'll give them huge, huge confidence, because they need to be able to attack more freely than they have been. And I thought it was a great starting point. I thought it was a very good performance, and it asked a lot of questions of Connacht, but at Leinster, it's the perfect fillip for this weekend. I think Roger's always taking this competition seriously, but the reality is La Rochelle are in a bit of a battle in the top 14. They're still going to qualify if they beat Quinns next week, which you would say they're well capable of doing that. I'm fascinated to see their selection. And also, I mean, you have to take into account, like, 60 points against Toulon looks amazing, but La Rochelle had rested a few lads the week before when they took 60 against Toulouse.
Yeah.
Like, with 3 games over Christmas, those French clubs heavily rotate for their away games. Toulouse got beaten in Perpignan. Perpignan got their first win of the season because they rotated heavily. I wouldn't... La Rochelle are still trying to find the right mix. They're not the team that they were. They're in a rebuild mode themselves. Are they dangerous? Yeah, they are, but we'll know a lot more when we see selection.
Yeah, form book comes with a health warning when you're talking about the top 14. Bigger picture for Leinster, if we're kind of bringing Ireland into it, looking ahead to Six Nations, the second quarter of that game at the weekend brought out some of the old issues we've seen with Ireland over the last year, where it's penalties compounded by more penalties and backing yourself into a corner. As soon as the opposition get into the 22, there's 2 or 3 penalties that follows. There's Joe McCarthy's yellow card, which, I mean, when you see the replay of that in the stadium, you're going, what on earth was he even thinking to think that he could put his hand on that ball and the referee wouldn't see it? They are the issues we've seen with Ireland over the last while, and Connacht get that opportunity. They score 17 points. I know Leinster pull away in the end, But that was a chunk of that game where you look at it and go, God, if you do that against a better team, you're going to be in serious trouble.
Yeah, I thought Andrew Brace came into the game with a very good mindset around he's not going to tolerate any discipline to breakdown, and that will actually free up the game to flow a little bit. And I think you saw that in the second half. And Leinster got caught probably for some of the things they got away with the week before against Munster. And I'd imagine there'll be a reaction to that. I think it's actually probably a good thing for Leinster that they're able to win with a bonus point and potentially understand that the game has changed a little bit, and that, okay, the URC, they had been getting away with it, as all the Irish provinces have been. But it seems as if the referees have spoken and said enough's enough. And he saw it in Ravenhill, the swinging around the ruck. It was penalised quite early by Mike Adamson. That's something that Leinster are very strong on, or have been doing a big part of the game. Joe McCarthy's very good at it because he's so powerful. He generally ends up winning that collision at the ruck and end up swinging his legs around. So if that's going to be something that's going to be stamped out in Europe, which I think it will be, stamped out in the Six Nations, well, hopefully that's the warning shot that Leinster and Ireland needed.
Yeah, so that's
a good thing.
That's something to really, really look out for over the next couple of weeks. How referees are dealing with that swinging around at the ruck, and just, I suppose, keep a little note on how many penalties have been given up for that.
Or how they will have to penalise it because Leinster will have stopped it. And okay. Leinster, the Irish province would have stopped it, Leinster, because they're all guilty of it. And I think that if you don't stop it in Europe, it'll be blown up in the Six Nations, so we need to stop it.
On Connacht, Gareth, again, we're talking about a rebuild again. This has been the theme of this episode. But they're at the stage of the rebuild where confidence looks low at the moment. And I think Stuart Lancaster is probably realising maybe he's dealing with a squad of players who have had a difficult few seasons. And that's a very, very difficult step to get through, I suppose, for new coaches coming in to make people realise. I suppose it's where Ulster were last season, where, you know, you're taking a lot of heavy defeats. There's a chunk in games where you can't really, you know, you can't really close the tap.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a difficult one for them, but at the same time, if you just simplify and go, right, let's say we're at rock bottom here. I'm not saying they are, but let's say you're right at rock bottom. You have to try to put a positive spin on it. And Stuart's been in and around these types of environments where he's went in, obviously. He's been in part of successful teams, and it's probably something for him as well to understand what the group's like. So it's going to take time, like anything. If you put it on where Richie was even a year or so ago. So he's obviously, Stuart's went in now. He's now learning his team. He's working out probably the best way for his team to play. But you're seeing glimpses of it, which... Look, they've put in some games where they can show that they can hurt teams. Like even at the weekend there, they can show that they can damage it. A very strong, basically, it's an Irish outfit. They do probably, you know, I think that with Cian Frawley going is going to be really important. That type of thing just kind of really emphasizes where they want to go. Shows also how they want to play the game potentially moving forward as well. So that would hopefully, you know, you start bringing those types of guys through, you start seeing younger fellas getting an opportunity to play. They're getting minutes under their belt, whatever way you want to put it. So they're probably where they'll be maybe in a year's time. You know, they're going to go into the Challenge Cup. They're still in that competition. So they'll be looking again to go every time they're off to Montpellier, they think this weekend. So they'll be looking at potentially being better for that experience when they come back. So, I think they're at a difficult stage, obviously, but they're still trying to find out what their best team is, what their best way of playing is. And I think actually over the course of time, and it's a bit like we've talked already, if we're given time, guys get more comfortable with what the shape is and stuff. And you start picking up one win, maybe if they went over to Montpellier and picked up a losing bonus point, you know, things like that can kind of just be a catalyst for the rest of the season almost.
I think it's something we spoke about last week as well, where it's not even a case where one week they look really, really impressive and the next week they look terrible. It's in each game. There's probably a 10-15 minute period where they look like a real top quality outfit. And then there's also a 20-25 minute period where they look like one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, and we saw that at the weekend. Obviously, the response, having conceded two tries, to go and score two yourself and get back into the game. And then that makes the second half capitulation even more harder to stomach because, you know, you've looked like you deserve to be on the same field as this team for a period. And then And you look like you're totally under, don't have enough talent, don't have enough fitness, don't have enough speed, don't have enough power to compete. And it can't be like, that's not the case. The Connacht aren't as bad as they looked in that second half. And what really disturbed them was a lot of the Leinster lights who were, you know, looked like they were much, much more powerful than them, much more accurate. So I was at the game and live. The last 20 minutes, they looked shell-shocked. They looked out on their feet. It was worrying. Body language was worrying. It's been a difficult, obviously, losing your home game against Ulster and then going to Dublin is not easy. But, yeah, it's going to be tough for Lancaster. He will get it right. It's just I don't know how low it'll have to go.
Yeah, I think that's nearly the worry, that this isn't the low point, that it could go a little bit lower. And if you think about it, in 2.5 weeks' time, they have the grand opening of their brand new stand. It's essentially the start of the rest of Connacht Rugby's lives in a couple of weeks' time when they open that new stand at Dexcom Stadium. It looks brilliant. Can't wait to get down there and see it all. There's just such a fear in that game against Leinster that it could be a real, real rude awakening.
And it'll be terrible if they lose that, because it'll be Leinster's total B team.
Yeah.
The Irish internationals won't be there. Whereas obviously there was Dan Sheen and Joe McCarthy the other night. That's a must win. That's a must win by hook or by crook. Connacht just need to get through that, because I think that will have a massive impact on the atmosphere in the ground for the rest of the season. Players will have a little bit more belief. And I think Lancaster will be thinking medium, long term. I think park that for the next 3 weeks. It's how do I get this team to be able to beat Leinster on a historic day in Connacht Rugby's history.
Yeah, so that's Connacht taking on Montpellier this weekend. And they play Montauban the week after, before that game against Leinster on Saturday the 24th of January, which will be their grand opening of the new stand at Dexcom Stadium. Fellas, we'll leave it there for now. Gareth, thanks a million for joining us. Birch, thanks as always. Again, a reminder, Leinster host La Rochelle at 5:30 on Saturday evening. Munster away to Toulon on Sunday lunchtime. And in the Challenge Cup this weekend, Connacht and Ulster in action, both on Sunday. Connacht away to Montpellier, Ulster taking on the Cheetahs. That game is taking place in Amsterdam. We'll speak to you again soon.